Hello and welcome to the latest Not a Yes Man's podcast. I'm Sean Richards and this is the point in the week you get to ask me questions about economics and financial markets. Your 274th opportunity to do so, in fact. Thank you as ever for the questions. The first one, and I'm recording this on Friday lunchtime in the UK, is about Japan, which is the topic of du jour, and the question is, what's going on? So let me start with the most obvious bit, which is that the Japanese yen is much weaker. Now, I've pointed out before that to my mind, this is a deliberate policy by Japan. They are depreciating their currency, and I'll come to the dollar levels in a minute, but remember, this is a bit of a type of currency war between Japan and China. Now, 156.75, which is where we currently are against the US dollar, poses quite a few questions. We're hearing things out from the Japanese Ministry of Finance. Why? Well, you see, they want a lower currency, as I've said earlier, in my opinion. This was the original Abenomics policy from a bit more than a decade ago, and that has carried on. But here's the thing, they want a Goldilocks version of it, and at the minute, it's a bit too hot, their porridge, isn't it? It's fallen too far. To give you an example, the man looking at foreign currency intervention, Kanda-san, said on March 29th that it had gone too far. People knew this is wrong levels, fundamentals, blah, blah, blah. But it was 151 then. As I said, it's 156.75 now. We know also that this is really uncomfortable, because it looks like there was some intervention earlier which took it back below 155. You see, in Japan, face culture is very important. So they took that lower whilst Bank of Japan Governor Ueda was speaking. Now, this was intervention not of the conventional type. It looks as though the Ministry of Finance and Bank of Japan picked up the phone to the market. So you can imagine what they were expecting to hear. There's only so many times you can cry wolf, though. But back to the issue. So, one, Japan, lower currency. What some would call a devaluation is what we're seeing. This has various consequences. But you see, if we just stay with the Bank of Japan itself, within Japan, it can control things. If you didn't know, it bought equities. You do now. And it's bought around about 37 trillion yen's worth. It's bought boats and boats and boats loads of Japanese government bonds, I think somewhere around 636 trillion yen at the moment. So it's been able to manipulate those markets. Remember, if anyone else did this, it would be illegal. It would be called price rigging, wouldn't it? But anyway, they have. But of course, the foreign currency is more difficult. And here's an example of where we see, for once, Economics 101 actually working. Do I mean whereby you have this thing, Bank of Japan, buying bonds, in return giving people yen, there's more yen around, so the currency falls. Well, that's kind of worked, hasn't it? More complicated if you go through to the money supply, but it's kind of worked. So that is the situation. Why are we here? Well, they're trying to respond to the lost decade, which became the lost decades, and we see low growth, not very much. Of course, they have the issue of a shrinking population. Even through this burst, they haven't had a lot of inflation. A lot by their terms, not by ours. And so this is where they're kind of trapped. Let me bring in the next one. Japanese real wages have been falling for some time. If you read the mainstream media or look at it online or whatever, you'll think that real wages have gone up, because every year they tell us they are, and then the actual figures come out and they've gone down again. That is a matter for their consciences as well. They've reported this for virtually the whole Abenomics era now, a decade. It's always about to turn a corner on a straight road. So I hope that gives you some idea of the picture as to how Japan is, how it's working, and what the state of play is. Moving on to the next bit, relates in a way to a blog I wrote this week. And the issue is, what's the issues with inflation measurement? And how does that differ between different countries? So let me address that. How does this work? Let's start with how you measure inflation. There's two ways. One is you can use the money supply. It's actually more complicated than you think. But anyway, people mostly don't. And so the official measures you have are an idea of looking at price changes. Now, in absolute purest terms, it's a continuous rise in prices, which is really difficult. I don't think there's any market that runs, you know, for the whole week, the whole 168 hours. I think oil gets near, and I think that does close for some time on a Saturday. So, in purest terms, I don't think there's anything that qualifies for that. If you merge that a bit, there are some. So you're back to the fact that what you're actually measuring is price changes. That in itself is more difficult than you might think, because that there's certain goods and services that change and are better. How does that work? Let me give you an example. Something like TVs, laptops, that sort of thing. There's been an enormous quality change, hasn't there? How do you measure that across? So there's one thing. But in general, the principle is that you look at what people spend their money on, and then you weight it for how much of it they spend on it. And then you can construct an index which gives you an idea of price changes for the typical person. In practice, as already hinted at with, say, the quality moves, it's more difficult than that. Actually, the pandemic has thrown in another swerve. And the swerve here is that people's actual expenditure in the area has varied so much, it was very different from what was put in the numbers. And then another one more recently that's caused a lot of trouble is that the change in energy prices meant in that year, things were weighted on the previous year's action. Well, when people were spending twice as much, three times as much, that was a change, wasn't it? And of course, I'm talking of an average here, because there were spells when some people couldn't afford domestic energy at all because it's got so expensive. So I hope I'm giving you an idea of some of the issues here. And if I may be permitted to blow my own trumpet, I've made the case for the UK Retail Price Index in the UK that's performed well in this regard. You'll find it's called Not a National Statistic. Speaks for itself, doesn't it? Now, let me also give you an idea that the real contentious area, in my view, in inflation measurement, and it's around housing, and in particular, owner-occupied housing. If you've never heard the phrases imputed rents or rental equivalents, what this is that they don't want to put house prices in because they move up too much. I mean, excuse me, they're an asset. And then they don't want to put mortgages in either. Now, mortgages are slightly awkward because the central bank shouldn't look at them. So, well, why is it raising inflation when it's trying to raise interest rates to cut it? But from a cost of living point of view, you want that in, don't you? Because a lot of people right now are paying higher mortgage costs, and you want to measure that, if you wish to measure it properly anyway. So instead, you have these imputed rents or rental equivalent, where if you own your own home, you're assumed to pay rent. And yes, you did hear that right. That hasn't gone very well. In fact, it's gone awfully. In fact, in my own country, the UK, it's been a disaster. But if we come back to comparing this internationally, you see, if you have rents with imputed rents, you get to roughly a third of the US CPI. Awkward, isn't it? And now even domestically within the US, that's a problem, because the PCE measure that the Fed follows only has it at around about 11% last time I checked. That's a bit awkward, arguing amongst themselves, aren't they? But back to an international comparison, you see, Europe and what's called the HICP measure, so what's used in the euro area, doesn't have owner-occupied housing at all. So, in comparing, say, with the US has about a quarter of its index, I think it's 26% right now, as imputed rents. That's not in the European measure at all. So that's an enormous difference between the two. And for those wondering, the UK CPI follows the euro area measure. So it's housing that's very contentious. And there's something worse. You might be thinking, oh, it's imputed rent, rental equivalent stuff. Yeah. Well, you see, they usually don't measure rents very well either. Most places have a problem with that. So what they do is they use a stock, or some call it a bath. In the UK, it's 14 months. In the US, it's 6. So when you read that people are saying US rental inflation's high, but it's going to drop, they already know this because the 6 months have got to run through. By the time that's measured out, that could be 9, 10, 11 months. In the UK, the 14 becomes more like 18. So, as you can see, there are these various factors in it. And let me be absolutely clear. These things have been a deliberate effort to undermeasure inflation in the housing area. Because why? What have we seen central banks do? They've pumped up house prices. But it's a wealth effect, they're assets, you're better off. Never really explains what the first time buyer is supposed to do, do you? They're so well off, in fact, they've got to pay twice as much and they can't afford it, if you get my gist. So hopefully I've sort of signposted some of the differences here. You'll find I blog on this subject a lot. It's a specialist area for me. And I may even be the expert on rental inflation. It's a bit frightening, isn't it? Certainly I know a lot more than the nonsense the official bodies sometimes produce, which again is another disgrace, I'm afraid. Sometimes what should be factual output is propaganda. Anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have, please take the advice of the Coral and pass it on.